Snack Bar Games Podcast.
Welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 270. I'm Andrew.
And I'm Henry.
Hey, Henry.
Hey,
you're
Andrew.
You're not Graham.
What? Oh, my God. What's happened to me? I've turned Canadian and speak differently.
Whoa.
No, I'm just... Graham's still here.
Graham's still here, too. But,
I was nervous. No, it's me. I'm doing great. Very excited to see the year wrap up and get most of my Christmas shopping all done already. That's always a goal of mine. I rarely achieve it, but I only have one more gift to go, and I think we're two and a half weeks from Christmas.
Is the gift for us?
The gift is not for you guys. The gift I'm giving you is me being here, and you can't return that.
Can we re-gift it?
To a different website. Yeah, sure.
Well, we actually do, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, we're re-gifting it to the
gift editors.
Yeah.
So, yes, to the listeners, our gift to you is re-gifted Henry. Enjoy.
Remember, you can't return it.
We also want listeners to listen to the podcast. So it may be a good idea to say that we re-gift me now instead of at the end.
True.
Yeah. But I'll be here.
Okay. Chris Ingersoll's here, too. Hey, yeah. Chris.
Yeah, he is.
Me and my meat pillow.
What?
My wife and I don't stand on actual Christmas dates, so I got my present from her already, and it is a Monster Hunter 3 meat pillow.
Wow.
It's a giant shank of, like, barbecue meat in the shape of a pillow the size of one of my cats.
That's
special. Well,
what is a meat pillow? Is it, do you eat it, or is it a pillow? I'm confused by the whole thing.
Pillow shaped like a thing of meat.
A pillow shaped like a thing of meat? Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Great. I thought you got like a big slab of meat that you were going to eat that kind of looked like a pillow, which to be honest would be slightly better. But hey, comfy pillows are good things.
As long as you're not using actual meat as pillow, then I think we're okay.
It really just wouldn't last very long.
Nah. Right, not in a house with two cats. No, that's just dumb.
Yeah. That's true. Lucas is joining us today. How's it going, Lucas?
I've been better, but I'm also okay, so I guess it kind of evens out.
Excited for the end of the year?
I don't really have any strong feelings either way.
Okay.
But I've been having trouble sleeping this week, so I'm kind of in a weird place right now.
All right.
But I'm here.
Yay! And last but not least, Jeff's here. How's it going, Jeff?
Good.
Good.
Looking forward to having a little time to get through some of these new games.
I have a few things I need to catch up on too.
Yeah, man, the end of year backlog is always like the worst thing. Of course, the thing is, you know, since we do the Game of the Year awards thing, I always kind of have to take stock of what I've missed and what I will miss in the next like 2 months at the beginning of November. Just like make this list of like, all right, what do I need to play? And, like, you know, I'll try to schedule, like, two or three games in that I, you know, haven't gotten to yet just so I can, you know, talk about them with you guys. That decision is always really tough.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this year I did manage to get in a few that I probably would have held out on. Like, I was going to save Tearaway for the holidays, but I really wanted to include that if that turned out to be any good we were doing, and it did.
That game's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of sad because I get the feeling most people probably did what you almost did, which is kind of push that game aside for the other stuff, which I can't say I blame them, but, you know, kind of sad.
Well, yeah, I think most people maybe put it aside and will never get back to it, whereas I was going to buy it and sit it next to the Vita and then open it, you know, around Christmas time.
But, that's also true.
I have Lego Marvel on that list right now, I think.
That seems like a good one to have on that list.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
That's a good end of the year game.
Not a pressing need.
Yeah.
All right, so for today, we're not going to talk about games specifically. We're going to go over the biggest news stories of the year, at least what we consider to be the biggest news stories of the year, quarter by quarter, and eventually get to what are kind of our overall thoughts on the launches of the new consoles, plus how the Wii U did this year. So let's start with THQ. They just kind of exploded this year, and all of their properties went all over the place.
Yeah, or at the very least, their properties went all over the place this year. And they,
Yeah. The actual explosion was late last year.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting to look at that kind of thing. You know, last year kind of it was the causes of the demise of THQ and, you know, why it was faltering and the state of the industry and all that. But this time it's really interesting. Like, to me, I think it's more intriguing to see where these properties go and what gets done with them. And, you know, it's been kind of a, you know, I hate to use this term, a mixed bag.
Oh, man.
Like Saints Row turned out great. I think Deep Silver's the partner for them, like better than THQ. They know they're doing.
Yeah. And I think I'm pretty sure Metro did pretty good for them, too, for, you know, what that game was going to be.
Yeah. And I think that fit really well with what Deep Silver had already been doing.
Exactly.
And it like kind of just that part of Europe, they were pretty good at, you know, working with and managing.
But everything else,
Volition's a little different, but I think like specifically like the PR and marketing people with Deep Silver knew how to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I think like a lot of it, we won't be seeing the results of for a little while. Like South Park, for example, which was supposed
releasing
to come out
in winter 2012.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good that Ubisoft has been kind of upfront about it. At least I think, I don't know. I feel like THQ, once after they announced that game, they kind of just kept pushing it around without any real sign of what they were doing with it, and then they crumbled, and then, yeah. But I don't know. It was weird.
Parker Stone rolled with it, though. They just plugged it at the end of their
Black Friday
trilogy.
That's the advantage they have, you know, with that, what, like 6-day turnaround for all of their episodes.
Yep.
You know, first, it's like, well, we're just going to make a timely joke. Because totally can.
Exactly.
You know, one thing that is kind of upsetting about South Park was that it showed so well at E3.
Yeah, a lot of people are pretty excited about it.
Like they generated a lot of people talking about that game, and now they sort of lose it the further away they get.
Now they have to wait for it a few months. Oh no.
Yeah,
I mean, I think
less of a deal than it, you know, maybe making it out before new consoles.
Yeah.
I'm not one
of these people, but there are people that are like, well, I got the new one. I just packed up the old one. I'm done with it. Like, okay.
I mean, I don't know. I think what is that, a February release now? March? I can't remember. I think it's February. But it's early 2014, so that's much better than December. I mean, I'm sure it would have done okay in December because there's basically nothing coming out in December, but there's also kind of a reason nothing comes out in December. So I don't know. I think it's for the best for that game. I think even though it's a you know, last generation title at this point, it's kind of, I think it'll do better when there's basically nothing else coming out for new consoles and old consoles early next year. And then I guess the only other big thing is that Sega, you know, got Relic, and they got the published company of Heroes, which turned out okay, but that game was already mostly done anyway for them. So
yeah.
It kind of fits in their wheelhouse after, you know, they purchased Creative Assembly a few years back.
Right.
People were also really worried about Darksiders for a while, too.
Yeah.
Whether or not those games are games you like, people were talking about it until it finally popped up again.
It was sad that Visual shut down, but pretty much everyone who worked at that company who wanted to continue to work in the industry got to work in a new studio, which is now under Crytek. So that's, I don't know what they're working on. It's not Darksiders anymore, but...
Yeah,
it's, you know, those guys have a lot of talent.
Yeah, I think Crytek kind of realized that they could get the talent that they wanted for less by doing it on their own instead of going through the sale.
Yeah, although they did buy Homefront, which mostly just because they were already working on a Homefront game. I don't know what that game's going to actually turn out to be if it ever comes out. But
I think that was mostly to protect. just to get the license.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so they're just going to get the whole cut of all the sales now. So it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. And yeah, I think Relic fits pretty well at Sega with, along with, Creative Assembly. So I think that Sega's kind of cornered a market that I never expected Sega to corner, but.
More than anything, Sega is like a European PC developer.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
One of their biggest franchises is Football Manager. I mean.
Yep. Football Manager and Total War and a company of yours, maybe less so, but Football Manager and Total War, I think, are their most profitable franchises at all right now. So weird. There's still a lot of chips that are going to fall on that. Like all the Nordic game stuff, we kind of don't know where any of that's going.
They bought 95% of the leftovers, basically.
Yeah.
And the big one they have is Darksiders, which everyone was kind of concerned about because, you know, people like those first two games a lot, and they left it open for a third.
Yeah.
So
I just think you won't see any big splashes from that because Nordic's just going to make some smart financial decisions. You know, I believe it just negotiated a deal with Double Fine to give him those rights back to those games that were in there.
Stacking. Yeah.
You know, it'll make money, but I don't know. Yeah. We won't see crazy stuff from Nordic Games, I don't think.
Who got the U-Draw license? I forgot. Was that also Nordic?
Yeah, I think that's in that just big bundle.
Yeah. Okay.
Were they forced to take it? Like, you can have these for a good price, but you have to take this too.
On the way out the door, they tried to leave it on the table, but they caught them.
I mean, I do think it was like a part of the auction was that it was a lot. So
yeah.
It's like buying a Humble Bundle. There's always that one game.
Yeah, though I don't know if they actually got U-Draw, because that might have been part of the bundle with like the physical warehouse of all the U-Draws. I don't know where that ended up.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, U-Draw.
Oh, U-Draw.
Right. Well, THQ, very fondly remembered, but let's keep going with the other
big...
Don't
go that far, but yeah, let's keep moving.
Aww, THQ was fun.
They were doing better these past, I mean, not That's financially, true. Obviously, yeah. but better in terms of their quality releases these past couple years.
They're okay with me because of WWE games. So
When Ruben came in, he really did right the ship with quality, but it didn't translate into sales.
Yeah, so. It was a little too late.
That's
the one thing we didn't mention, that 2K now has the WWE license, and they also were basically working with the same developer at this point. So,
but yeah.
Again, that's one of those things where that game was probably
everything
pretty far.
Is gravy.
And also, that wasn't really THQ owned anyway, as much as it was just a publishing deal.
Yeah,
so.
It was publisher. Yeah. That was never going anywhere.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Well, I'll try and segue without anybody jumping on me again, but THQ goes bankrupt. We are sorry for the people that worked at THQ. No, we're not. Those people are idiots. No. The other big news item is from quarter one, Disney acquires the Star Wars franchise for $4 billion, and LucasArts shuts down, sorry?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. LucasArts hasn't really done it much of value
in
these past few years.
The LucasArts that people remember...
Telltale's doing all that work.
That's Telltale and Double Fine.
Dead. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, how big an impact will Disney owning the Star Wars franchise have on games going forward, do you think?
Well, I mean, we've already seen
weird stuff.
Yeah. I don't think there'll be a Star Wars Connect Star Wars, whatever that game was called.
Oh, let's hope not.
Well,
I mean, we've already seen.
I don't know. I mean, there was Connect Disneyland. Like, Disney also was complicit in that arrangement. So
true, but I don't think. I get the feeling most people don't really care about Kinect games anymore.
But I think you're going to see big, safe stuff. Like, yeah, there's going to be a new Battlefront eventually at some point in the next 5 years.
I mean, they've already made a big move by kind of basically saying, hey, EA, it's all yours.
Yeah.
So but
I think you will see more stuff like, you know, Tiny Death Star. And they're just going to make money.
Disney generally, like, they seem to want to avoid in-house development of like larger video games.
Yeah, they have the luxury of not having to be tied to make a game.
Most of what they do is like mobile games.
Yeah,
and, like as far as in-house, so like Disney Interactive or whatever.
Yeah, the thing about it is with a lot of the Disney Star Wars deal, a lot of the other aspects of it, you could just see how it handled Marvel and kind of go from there. But the problem with games is that, especially there's been those Activision games where basically as long as Activision keeps making games, it keeps the license.
Yeah.
And we know now that it won't ever get it back if it stops making the games. So it's just, yeah.
To be fair, that applies to like the movie studios too.
Yeah, well, you know, like the Fox end of it, yeah. But like that, there wasn't really much in the way of games going on that wasn't part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel really bad that we haven't gotten like a good solid Ultimate Alliance game in a while, and I don't include two, but
yeah, that's fair.
Is what it is. But you know, for example, as much as it never said X-Men, Deadpool was like their quota for keeping the X-Men license. So, because there's Marvel Heroes. X-Men in the background. Oh, great. Thanks. X-Men.
Yeah. Like Marvel Heroes was kind of a big project and that seemed to do okay.
Yeah. But yeah, like Lego Marvel turned out great. And that's like I still don't understand how the licensing worked on that.
Yeah, that was Warner Brothers, which they're, right. You know, that's. They do the DC stuff, you know. They're the DC company.
And there's a blood feud there, so I really don't.
Lego just has enough money to get all the licenses.
Yeah.
Well, Lego didn't do anything. Lego itself is a license that's being bought, so. But
well, I mean, they have all the stuff they do is based on sets they have already. So there's.
Yeah, like, but
I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about business wise, but
yeah,
like Lego has all those properties too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a sub license at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like Lego and Star Wars already had a pretty long standing relationship before the video game ever happened.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, so I don't know, man. I don't know. I really don't think we're going to see a lot from the Star Wars thing for a while.
Probably not. I think the first tied
into a recent news thing, it's interesting that the Disney also just picked up the Indiana Jones stuff too.
Yeah, yes. Or unclutter that license anyway.
Yeah.
I guess they still had whatever Lucasfilm owned.
They had the past, the rights, pretty much the existing films, but not the future, any future projects. So now they have the full, basically the full license.
As I understand it, the thing they don't have is distribution rights to the old films.
Okay.
Is that they own the IP, but they don't own distribution rights to the films. They have distribution rights to the new films.
Got it. Okay.
I think.
It's confusing either way.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess moving on to Q2, I think the first big thing, which I think this is continuing on a bit of a downtrend, sort of.
This year has been a downtrend.
Yeah, I mean, up until new console stuff, I think.
Up and through new console stuff.
yeah. So I mean, SimCity launched this year. The new SimCity from EA.
Yeah.
The online only SimCity that people were skeptical about, but I think I was a little optimistic about. I you know what? I thought it looked good.
Yeah.
I thought it looked good. I think I know Henry was excited about it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that launched and man that yeah.
The only sort of positive I think we can take away from the launch, we'll talk about the problems in a little bit,
yeah,
is I hope that other companies looking at a similar style will look at the sort of the public backlash, and they had a huge return rate on Amazon's online store, and that's really where they're going to pay attention and hopefully not do this in the future.
I mean, it's a problem with kind of all online games, but SimCity was maybe the apex of the problem.
I agree.
Like we're seeing it even now. Like, what, Battlefield's still having all those issues.
Yeah.
But you know, just the server load you need at the launch of an online focused game is going to be at least 20 times what you need in like a week on the first day. Yeah. Like, it's just a huge drop off. So I think we'll try to. I mean, maybe we'll see some attempts to try to combat that problem. Like maybe some sort of phased release. How MMOs handle it, but like maybe on a larger scale.
Yeah.
I feel like that's exactly what happened with, for example, Grand Theft Auto V later. GTA Online did not launch with that game, and as a result, probably a lot fewer people played it. But
it's not really a
problem.
Yeah.
No,
if you look at any recent MMO release, you'll notice that one of the pre-order bonuses is almost always early access.
Yeah.
This isn't entirely just some kind of something they throw out there to try and get pre-orders. They're trying to space out when people are joining the game.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Final Fantasy 14 tried to do that and they weren't the most successful at it, but I think they cleared it up faster than EA did with SimCity, for example.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think they're learning. I think the companies are learning a lot from SimCity this year in general in terms of online launches. It's just been.
It's also probably hard to tell because of the audience. Mm-hmm. Like SimCity is going to have a bigger audience than Final Fantasy, the MMO.
Yeah.
Just by default.
Yeah, that's true.
And there wasn't. Since it had been so long since the last real SimCity game and no SimCity game before this, it had kind of online features in this way. Like, if you're launching Call of Duty, you know basically what you're going to need for a new Call of Duty. Maybe it'll be slightly more, but, like, you can anticipate that pretty well.
Yeah.
There was no metric for SimCity. It was just like, how many people are going to try to play this? We don't know. So,
the thing is, though, they had two betas. And everyone assumed, oh, okay, this is EA trying to, you know, see how things are going to go at launch. You know,
but I mean,
test things out.
Like, the vast majority of the problems were server load and not any sort of bugs or anything. I mean, there were bugs, but that wasn't the main problem.
EA's had quite a few MMOs under its belt, and they probably should have known what to expect.
I mean, I guess...
It's a design... I mean, you guys are absolutely right about all the server stuff and the online stuff. The core problem with this kind of mentality is that companies feel like they have to include a multiplayer for a game to be very profitable, which isn't necessarily the case. And SimCity has never really been about multiplayer ever.
Well, I think,
and I know sometimes you shoehorn things in there, like with Metroid Prime 2's multiplayer.
Yeah,
but
I think this may be something a little different than that, though. I think multiplayer wasn't necessarily the goal here.
Yeah.
As much as it was combating piracy, which is a huge, huge problem on PC, way more than on console. And they had to justify it in some design way by making it compelling in some way for it to be online.
And I have five problems with SimCity, but I loved the idea. Initially, it was off-putting, but I actually kind of loved the idea of having, like, interconnected cities. Even if we had all those issues, I think the idea was sound. And I had my fingers crossed for this one. Like, I was like, this could be really big. I think this could be a huge step forward for the series. I mean, I know people would want the whole, the single player only, you know, like, offline entirely, version of SimCity where it's just, you know, you're just continuing to do the thing you've done in the previous SimCity games. But I thought, you know, this seemed like an interesting approach, at least.
Since it had been so long since the previous SimCity, I think SimCity 4 came out 2002, 2001.
There were societies, but we don't want to talk about that.
We don't. I guess we don't count that. So
that
I
didn't happen.
Yeah, that didn't happen. No, I know what you mean, Andrew. I think that would have been. I would have been more open to the idea had we seen SimCity 5, maybe in 2006, 2007, and we saw that sort of incremental increase to sort of hold us over. And then with this new one, if they want to do experiments, say we're going to try this and this, I think it may have been easier for people to accept. But, like, people are still playing SimCity 4 with all these insane mods. There's a huge community there.
SimCity 4 is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, it's great. It's hard to run on a lot of systems still. But Graham, I think you hit the nail on the head with the piracy thing. It's just really frustrating to see companies do that. But I guess they gotta protect their assets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems
or do
odd
they?
Because well, Origin is required to run the new SimCity, and it in itself is checking for piracy.
Yeah, it's DRM basically, but
it's already doing like activations and everything.
But I guess they
any time I hear a company putting a lot of this sort of is like, I guess, Diablo 3 with the auction house a little bit, but like any time a company sort of focuses their efforts on something like this, like piracy, instead of making the game good, it like takes away from it, and they're missing the point. I know Valve has Steam and people like that, but their stance on piracy is pretty lax compared to other companies, and I feel like this was a huge mistake.
I mean, I just think it's a little more nuanced than people normally think, simply because most people who have such vitriol against DRM just haven't worked for, you know, like, haven't worked in games. When you see those stats where, you know, the average game is like 88% of games are pirated, and that's like a low figure, you know? So it's like, if we can cut that down to where it's like 75%, all of a sudden, like, we can all eat.
Yeah.
then kind of like, okay, maybe you want to try spending about 20% of your time on stuff to try to get people to stop pirating. Like, maybe. Then you kind of understand where that motivation comes from.
It's just a bummer because I was with her with Henry. I was right there with Henry on like this being one of my most anticipated games of the year. And, you know, I had a feeling it would have a rocky start, but the fact that it went on for as long as it did, I think it was at least almost a full month before that game was like fully featured again and back to at least like fully like the way it was meant to be.
Did it ever get Cheetah Speed back?
Yes, it did. It did eventually. Yes, it took like a while, but it did. It basically, by the time that happened, most people who were so upset about SimCity had moved on. So that kind of probably helped with the server issue also.
One interesting bit of news that did come from SimCity's troubles was Origin becoming the only digital service to offer full refunds.
Yeah, that is true. I think that's a good thing. Step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
So the real enemy here is pirates. We can all agree on that.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Andrew.
Let's talk about and others. Andrew and friends. Let's talk about the
I don't want to talk about that.
Didn't we do that already? Too. Not like anything new has happened since.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunately true. It came out.
We're talking about Q2's big news at the time.
Yeah. There were some sick Black Friday deals in EVS for anyone that wanted one.
Look, so. I still think if you buy it and you buy Bomb Squad and Towerfall, you will be happy with your purchase. But I do wish literally anything good would have released since June.
Literally anything.
Literally anything.
Yeah.
And they say the Wii U has no games.
Who says
Wii
that?
A lot more high profile.
Let's talk about that. Wii U has games.
Yes, it does.
But the angry Kirby's say otherwise.
Angry Kirby's have no place here.
To be fair, angry Kirby's don't consider Wii U a current gen console too. So,
man, angry Kirby's are the worst. Don't be an angry Kirby.
Yeah, but I mean, like the Ouya.
That doesn't have any games on it. No. I say that I think perfectly content with my Bomb Squad system hooked up to my TV.
I'm enjoying my Twitch box.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Twitch is pretty solid. It got a nice build of XBMC. So, you know, it has potential. Not really games potential.
I think the problem with that though is more the Android base than it is the actual Ouya.
Well, I mean, here's the thing: you can install the Amazon App Store and buy apps through that, and if it has controller support, then like a lot of stuff works.
Right, but I don't buy apps on my phone. But I'm thinking there isn't a lot being offered because the Android base is so fractious.
That's like, true.
It's not a standard like the iOS is.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you wanted to buy those like mobile GTA ports, they're pretty good. They run on this. Some weird Kimco JRPGs. You can get those for like a buck. Those totally work.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Do you think this is good for video games in general, like sort of smaller consoles coming out like this?
And failing? No.
It seems pretty much impossible for any other console to break in. It seems like a very tight clique of the big three.
GameStick, trying. I don't think any of them is going to find traction.
Upstarts don't have the ability to break through and have a large presence in the industry. I was hoping for a small little indie game box. And I got it for a month or so. Like, I'm not that mad. But I mean, there are companies that could put out a console now and compete. But it's very few. EA could do it.
Apple
could put out a box to run iOS apps. Probably. That's not really, that would not compete with something like regular consoles.
And then Valve, of course.
Way better than Roku. Like that. Like if they up their game on their Apple TVs, like that could be a nice thing for people to have around. But
right,
yeah.
The thing with like companies like EA and Valve, they already have the demographic paying attention to them that would buy a console. Like a lot of Apple's, like all the like the people that buy Apple stuff, aren't always people who are looking to buy a game console.
I think most people who buy Apple stuff just want stuff on the go specifically. I doubt they would care about that much about a thing that lets you play those iOS games you have on your phone on a TV or something.
And we're going to talk about this later, but that's basically the same like Wii to Wii U transition problem where the people who support one type of thing are probably not the market for the other.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I asked this as someone who basically ignored the Ouya, even when it was a big Kickstarter success. Were people excited about this? Was this a thing to be excited about at any point? Because I feel like
Potential was definitely there.
I mean, I feel like the way people talk about it now, it's as if, and I'm not just talking about the anger curbs. I mean, just generally, like the general consensus on the Ouya is just like this wasn't something that was really that exciting to begin with. But people were really into it because it was a new thing, at least at the time when it was first announced and it was a Kickstarter thing. So, I mean,
any expectations higher than, like Graham said, an indie brew box was probably misguided.
I mean, yeah, I don't think anyone expected anything above that, but I think, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Movement on the internet of people saying that, like, this is going to be the anti-establishment box. It's just going to. It's going to overthrow AAA gaming.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. So, you know, those people were kind of dumb just in general. But
yeah, but like, I think that answers your question.
Yeah, you know how people feel about the Vita right now where it's not getting any actual games? But like, man, look, it's got Hotline Miami and Spelunky and you can just, you know, play it. And, you know, like, I really like putting all the indie games on it and playing it. Like, there was that kind of, like, smaller group, but, like, there will be cool things and... I mean, there are some interesting things on it. Like, you know, I mentioned this when it came out, but more of them are in there now. Like, Terry Kavanaugh has put all of his, like, freeware stuff on there.
Oh, cool.
And it's still free, and you can just play it. I don't know. It's weird experimental stuff. Anyone who's not looking to make a profit, that's still an interesting platform. But, I mean, you can't measure your success in sales numbers on that system.
No way.
Terry Kavanaugh was also fortunate in that most of his games were already on Android.
That's true.
He's one of the people that I would be interested in a system to play his games on, but not just for his stuff. There needs to be something else. I mean, besides PC, obviously. Bomb Squad seems pretty cool. And Towerfall seems pretty cool, but I'll be able to play that on my PS4 apparently. So I'm excited about that. So that's one less reason to get a new I guess. I mean, if someone wants to give me an Ouya, I'll play Bomb Squad, but I don't.
You won't. I gotta spend hours and hours and hours with it.
Yeah, it will sit near my TV and probably be turned on a couple of times, and then that's about it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I enjoyed following the story. I read about the launch. I liked hearing you guys talk about it. But yeah, I never really had a ton of faith that it would sort of succeed. Not saying that I called that one because a lot of people did. But I still like the idea that people are trying things like this. Usually hear about,
but here's the thing. Talking about this in the context of a year in review, I think people are done trying this for a while.
No, yeah. I don't mean trying it out. I mean, what am I mean? By, you know, the people that worked on Ouya, like, if they consider this a failure, that may happen. But you hear a lot of stories later on in life about how, like, this person has finally risen to the position they wanted and they created something amazing because they worked on things like Ouya or these other small startups that sort of quote-unquote failed but led to greater things. So I don't see this as an entire waste of time. But I'm optimistic.
You are optimistic.
You are.
I am.
And that's why we
disgusting.
Like you.
That is.
Thanks, guys. Well, enough about Ouya. Let us talk about some more positive news as we head into the third quarter of 2013. E3, which, I mean, you could probably technically say it was Q2, but screw it. We're going to call it Q3 E3. Gentlemen, what did you think about E3 this year?
Yeah, okay.
It happened. It took place.
It did. Yeah.
I'm happy to answer any questions you have about it, but I don't know.
Graham was not very happy with E3.
Well,
Graham,
I mean, you were not happy with E3. It's just one of those things where, to me, E3 is this collection of about 90 different things that happened and not really like one experience.
Right.
I thought the press conferences were overall, all of them across the board, solid for the first time ever, I think. There wasn't that one really bad one. There
weren't many train wrecks.
Yeah, well, there was, you know.
All you have to do is imagine if Sony had its conference before Microsoft, and Microsoft would have been a different experience.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I came away from the Microsoft event, you know, like, whatever, we were walking out of it, just like, that was fine. Like, you know, no surprises.
It was good. I mean,
there was that moment where we couldn't hear Crimson Dragon, but, like, I don't know, that was okay. It was solid. You didn't have any Kinect moments. Like, it was fine.
There were definitely a few... Yeah, some bad things that happened during some of the press conferences, but overall they were all solid.
Let's just never, ever, ever again ever talk about any Ubisoft conference. Can we do that? Can we just not ever speak about them?
Hey, I thought the Ubisoft conference was all right. I don't know.
Back to the press conferences, I'd say that E3 was definitely the peak of that narrative of the consumers versus the publishers. You know, however you perceive that, that definitely was where everything came to a head and kind of shifted into another direction.
What do you mean exactly?
Well, like, you know, everyone talking about the Xbox One's policies and everything, and
that's,
you know, that happened, and everyone was like, okay, that's what we expected, and then Sony came out and did their thing, and then that led to all the other changes later. So it was kind of in between everyone being afraid of what was going to happen and everyone being like surprised, and then kind of the fallout from that. So everything came to a head at E3, I would say.
That's true. Graham, go ahead,
Graham. Andrew. You actually, for the listeners who don't know, Graham, of course, went to E3. How was the atmosphere this year? I know you've been to, I think you've been to a couple other E3s before. I actually can't confirm that. Have you?
Yeah.
How was this one compared to previous years? Was the atmosphere, like, was everyone really excited? Was it just sort of going through the motions? What would you describe it as?
You know, it's hard to say because, you know, it's not a fan event. Excitement is a weird thing because usually, you know, media is not excited. Business, they're not excited. There was definitely a sense of importance and obligation this year.
Okay.
Kind of the opposite. This year was the opposite of the year when the Kinect and the Move and all that were released, and that you didn't see a lot of skepticism as far as what was released. There really wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for these launch games and things, but I don't know. You saw people there with purpose.
Okay.
Knowing that this was a big year, you know, like, this is an important one. This is a hardware year.
People are scrambling around trying to get the most coverage they can.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And you could see desperation from anyone releasing a current gen game, in the fall. That was interesting that people had to get especially creative for that kind of thing. Also, you know, in previous years, there was a lot of experimental stuff. Like, we're talking about stuff like, you know, Ouya and stuff like that. But, I mean, I don't know. People are getting into the Oculus Rift now. But besides that, all of the weird, like, attempts at making things 3D or attempts at motion control or attempts at any of that was just kind of not there.
I'm going to say I consider that a positive. I'm not going to tell you about the Oculus Rift specifically because I have no experience with that, but everything else you mentioned with 3D and
control
specifically, but that stuff to me just, I mean.
From an E3 perspective, it's a matter of, you know how in the games industry, the B-tier game has kind of fallen by the wayside and there's like the AAA and then it kind of goes down to mobile?
Yeah, basically.
This was kind of that version of that for E3, where it's like, well, okay, 2/3 of the space is for these new consoles and the manufacturers, and then, well, I don't know, there's like something going on over the Atlas booth where they're doing, I don't understand what's happening over there, some sort of weird, I don't know. Like, there's nothing in between that. Like, there was very little from, you know, medium-tier people. Like, even, like, large third-party publishers, like Activision was showing off like 4 games and a lot of it was behind closed doors. Like, there was less large spectacle, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you're basically. I mean, it was just about the consoles. I think maybe not next year, but probably the year afterwards, we might start getting back into the weirder stuff, the middle ground that you were talking about that it was lacking this year, at least hopefully.
I don't know.
It's next. Well, I think next year's going to be about this is how well we did, and then now here are the games that you actually want to play on these things.
Yeah.
You want now you buy them this year. But the following year is going to be actually.
Everyone can afford it.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like this year or the following year after that, 2015 is, I don't know. I think that's when things might start getting weird again because that'll be.
You're right, some of it may have been a struggle to keep people's attention. Yeah. In a long, long console cycle. So, yeah, I don't know. There's also
Nintendo kind of going out and reaching towards the fans.
With the Direct specifically?
The Direct and also like the stuff with Best Buy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was pretty cool, actually.
And even with the booth, it's weird because in the last few years, Nintendo has brought less and less to the show. Like the first year I went was 2009. And they had all of like, here's what's coming out on WiiWare, and oh yeah, you want to check out this like weird like DS thing? I don't know. We got this early demo of Golden Sun. Like it was weird. But yeah. In previous
years, this year was 2014 is going to be awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, in previous years it was one of those things where like, well, we got these four games. They're pretty good games. We're going to have like 14 kiosks for each one, and like that's it. But this year you saw a trend back to, hey, we're going to show off lots of stuff. We're really going to get everything in front of you. And that part was nice. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see a lot of that next year with the other systems as they have like that focus on software over hardware and things like that. But I mean, time will tell.
Yeah. I mean, I think overall this E3 was just kind of I think personally for me, it was a breath of fresh air because I do agree this console generation kind of went on a little too long. I think a lot of the big current or now last gen releases that came out mid to late this year were outside of GTA probably just kind of They were just kind of like, we probably would be developing this on a new console if these new consoles came out when they were supposed to. So here's this thing on current gen that isn't that great, but we'll keep you busy until the next big thing you care about comes out. I don't know. It was a weird year.
See, I had a lot of fun with the existing systems, and I will continue to do that because those
too.
Games are more fun than the games that are currently out on next-gen systems.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. That's definitely true. Yep. I'm just glad new consoles are here. Mostly, I'm just like I know you know those consoles don't really have a lot going for them right now, but I see a lot coming soon that I'm personally really excited about. So I don't know. So cool. I mean. I guess following E3, pretty much not even a full month afterwards, Microsoft kind of just went, oh, we had all these policies. You guys weren't a fan of them, so we're just going to just take those out. And people were genuinely – well, first, I think people were kind of angry at Microsoft for doing a 180, but then also kind of excited because they were angry about their policies to begin with.
It was weird how angry they were that they changed them. Because I mean, it is really cool to see a company actually listen and do something very proactive and very quickly when obviously they've put a lot of work into what they did. But yeah, it was funny when they reversed it, everyone was like more angry at them.
Well, there were some people, the Xbox 180 became a pretty commonly used headline on news sites and everything. It just was like... I don't know. People consider them cowardly for doing it.
I think
they're smart for doing it. But
let's. I think the focus should be less on the fact that people were angry because people just get angry all the time.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying.
I think now is a good time to look at what that has done, because I don't know if it's sunk into people that a lot of those ideas also came with some interesting ones. Like a lot of like the sharing things and stuff like that. Like you can't do that without having basically all the stuff tied to an account instead of being in a disk at your house. So, I mean, there's a lot of that where, the other shoe hasn't necessarily dropped yet because we haven't had enough time to think about it, but we won't get those new ideas. So
Yeah, at least not yet. I mean, I don't know. I think there was a place for what Microsoft was doing. I just think they handled it as poorly as you can handle something like that.
They weren't really afraid to publicly alienate people.
Yeah, they kind of put their foot in their mouth.
Man, some of those like PR
especially
guys.
when the military stuff came up, that was pretty awful.
Yeah, there was it was a mess. And
it was a game theory thing, you know. If Sony had also gone along with that as it looked like it was going to, then it wouldn't have ever been this Microsoft is horrible thing. People would have just been like, well, this is what it is. And maybe people would have been mad, but, you know, the world would have gone on. But Sony saw an opportunity to throw an elbow.
Yeah.
And it looks like it has paid off.
Oh, yeah.
Xbox Ones are not selling through their initial shipments. Maybe they'll sell through them, but there are Xbox Ones on shelves. And as I understand it, they're having supply issues, so there were fewer of them to begin with than PS4s. So, yeah. I mean,
the system is doing okay.
I don't think it's going to fail, but...
Yeah, it's just...
Clearly, Sony did what it needed to do to regain at least early positioning in North America.
And there are those people out there who still think those policies are in place. The people who aren't listening to this podcast...
know that the Wii U is a different system from the Wii, so let's not... I mean, let's not focus on those people.
Is that really their fault?
I don't know. Like, I mean,
not everybody hangs out on the internet all the time. That's something you have to consider.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it was a step in the right direction for Microsoft. I think they, I mean, again, this stuff would have been interesting to actually see how it played out if they didn't message it wrong. Basically, I think I don't know if they could have handled it well enough that people wouldn't have gotten angry. Cause again, the internet, but I think they could have done it better. They should have put the benefits up front. They should have
They'd been able to like tie games to an account at the cost of not being able to resell that disc, but making it optional so that was a choice that you could make. Then I think it might have been more well received, but people probably still would have been angry because.
Yeah, I mean they could have changed some policies around. They could have. I don't know. I think it was mostly messaging, though. I mean,
people want to own what they buy, and that's not going to change.
People have never owned what they've bought when it comes to software. So
people want to think they own what they buy.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Xbox One is basically just a slightly different PS4 at this point. I mean, it's got the Kinect still. That thing's not going anywhere probably. But in terms of the actual tech, it's just another Xbox that's more powerful. It's not what could have been a really interesting take on console gaming that might have failed, but I think could have been interesting. If they played their cards right, but they just didn't.
And I mean, neither system is going to really go fully digital with a 500 gig hard drive. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Probably not this gen. Maybe if there is another Xbox and another PlayStation, then we'll see. But I don't know.
I think until people are more on equal footing with being able to like afford this stuff and also have it that might have a better chance of succeeding, but right now there's still too much of a divide.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, hey, I still like buying physical games.
I almost exclusively buy physical games.
Yeah, I mean,
it's also ultimately more affordable down the line, so.
Yeah. Unless you just get PlayStation Plus, and then you just play all of the games all the time. Yeah,
that's true.
And never buy anything. Sometimes I like to think about alternate dimension where I don't have to play everything all the time and can just, oh, look, this is what I was given this month. Let's try it out.
That seems like...
It's a happy place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that working out for someone. If they, let's say, took a year off from new releases, and then the next year they got to play all those new releases for very cheap or basically nothing, that'd be pretty good, yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
It's like not buying movies and getting Netflix.
Yeah, which is pretty great.
It is pretty great, yeah. I like Netflix.
All right.
So yeah, I think we'll just kind of end on our overall impressions of the PS4 and Xbox One launches plus the Wii U, because even though they didn't launch that last year, kind of this was its first big year.
Before we move on to those, and I think we should move on to those, can we just mention how ridiculous of a year the 3DS had?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Crushed it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I would have gone insane this year if not for my 3DS, I think.
You know, in our next episode, we are going over our Game of the Year finalists, but that could have feasibly been 6 3DS games this year. Like, that's how good that lineup was.
Very easily.
So
yeah.
It's not. Sorry, spoilers. We do not have 6 3DS games. But, like, there were really, really good games in, like, a number of them this year. And I like, more than any other year, I've always loved having my 3DS, but man, have there just been like a constant flow of good stuff, both in the retail and on the eShop. Some really interesting things. Even the smaller things are, man, yeah.
Yeah. I picked a good year to buy one, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
It seems like the slow start thing is kind of becoming a recurring theme for Nintendo at this point.
Yeah.
But everyone, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess it's more noticeable with Nintendo because of the internet, people always claiming that Nintendo is doomed.
Well, and because Nintendo's systems have been fueled for the longest time by first-party releases.
Also true.
There's not, like, everybody just jumping in, you know, like, all those games that are, say, going to be on the Xbox One were going to be developed that way for the PC, and, you know, those games were on track to release then anyway, so it's not like they have to gear up and then create from scratch a new game. But, you know, Nintendo, generally, they don't work that way. So it is just a matter of, well, now that we got the hardware done, we can start making games. So 3 years from now, we'll have games. So. Yeah.
And I think just because I'm disappointed about it, I'm kind of sad that the Vita had the year it did. I was hoping for a little more.
Yeah.
Just a little. I mean, I really like Tearaway.
Yeah.
I think the new Ys game is okay, too. Besides that, Soul Sacrifice was cool.
I don't know. The Vita did not have a good year.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did the Vita not have a good year because the DS had such a good year?
The Vita didn't have a good year because Nintendo made a deal with Capcom a couple years ago, and now the Vita does not have Monster Hunter. So
it still kind of does. Just it's like a bunch of companies.
Yeah, the Vita has 14 different games that are almost Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But as far as it just doesn't have the market penetration that it used to have in Japan, which after the first like year and a half of the PSP, Japanese games were all that were fueling that system. And that's just not the case right now. They're releasing a game on the PSP is still a better idea than releasing a game on the Vita in Japan. So
it's probably a cost issue too, because a lot of the Vita, I mean, PSP was being carried by like Atlas and XSEED and Axis and all those guys. And
all these people used to the kind of budgets you needed to make a PS2 game, and they could just keep making a PS2 game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
so
I think
now we're seeing more stuff pop up on the 3DS from those guys. So
because that's the one place you can still make a PS2 game.
Yep.
That's true. I mean, I think
slower.
The Vita has a place here. It's just not as
it's just an increasingly dusty place.
True. But I mean, I think remote play for the PS4 is actually surprisingly really cool. And I think the cross-buy stuff, even though I don't use it, is neat too.
Do you guys think there's a point to be made about maybe worrying about making a handheld platform too powerful, putting too much tech into it?
Eh.
Maybe.
I'll say this. I'm not in love with most, like, RPGs that are for the 3DS and PSP. They have that weird aesthetic where, like, it's like an isometric view, but it's too close in, and I don't love character models. So I kind of feel like they're sort of in that middle. Like, if it was less powerful, it might be more endearing, and if it was more powerful, I might enjoy it more. So I'll say I'm not in love with most handheld graphics that are sort of going for a 3D look.
Well, I mean, in terms of, like, development and cost issues and stuff like that.
That it costs just as much to make a portable game as it does a console game now, but you're making a portable game? Yeah. Yeah, that part's rough. I mean, but I do think you can make games with smaller price points. Like, the idea of making, like, a $20 game is the way to go.
Absolutely. We like those games.
We like lots of games. We like most of the games.
It's true.
I think.
Yeah, and I guess the Vita's still doing the thing that the PSP tried to do early on and make console type games.
Yeah, and hey,
it's just not working.
You guys, it plays PSP games, and they look pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's great for legacy stuff. It always will be.
I don't know. You can still play all those cool PSP games on it. So I don't mind my little Vita. But it was not a good year.
Yep. I mean, I really like Tearaway. That justified the fact that justified my Vita purchase last year. But I mean, that's it. I don't know.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
But, yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the other systems.
Well, on that subject, did more games start using the transferring between the PS3 and the Vita, or did that just kind of dwindle off and die?
No, that's a big thing.
Yeah. Is it still? All right.
But like Dragon's Crown used it pretty well. Yeah.
They had to patch that in later, right?
No.
There was something.
I believe they may have patched in like.
Was it crossplay?
Crossplay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but the cross save always worked, and that was really
The only game I used it on was PlayStation All-Stars and had a lot of problems with it.
That's a shame.
Yeah, Vita version of that game had a lot of problems just in general. But
yeah.
Of course, I mean, I don't really know why. As much as I'm kind of interested in how like Smash is going to do on the 3DS, when you put like a four-player arena fighting game, I want to play that with other people in a room.
Yeah.
Not in a little thing. So
I'm probably going to end up buying both versions anyway, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well,
yeah. But anyway, let's talk about this year and not next year.
Yes. Okay, sure. So, I mean, you since we're on stuff that's kind of been out for a while, do you want to continue the trend with the Wii U? Talk about the Wii U's year?
Yeah. So, Chris, talk about the Wii U's year.
Or at least the Wii U's second half, which was actually decent, and then the first half, which had nothing.
That's not true. The first half had Lego City Undercover.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and of course, Monster Hunter.
Right, which I am now currently at 400 hours on my file, although, to be fair, about 250 of that is on my 3DS.
No, I'm still saying wow.
Yeah.
Well, I got 400 hours on my Animal Crossing save, too, and that came out 3 months later.
How much of that is just Pascal?
Way, way too much.
So if you guys don't know, if anyone listening doesn't follow Chris on Twitter, he keeps like screenshotting and posting everything Pascal says, and it's kind of like the highlight of my day.
Seriously, I just posted my 113th unique one today, I think.
Wow.
If you put that on Tumblr, you could probably get a following. I'm not even kidding.
I want a Tumblr following.
It'd be great. You get your name out there. You'd be
I finally complete this, I would like to put it up all on the site as like one giant gallery. But until then,
How do you know how many there are?
No.
So when will you know if you completed this?
I had someone else posted one a while back in a Penny Arcade thread that I have seen. That they posted one that I had not yet seen. So I'm still waiting to see that one before I even think I'm done.
Okay.
But I think my breaking point will be if I go a full week without getting a new one, because he hasn't. The game is, I think, 4 days has been the longest it's gone with repeats at this point. It used to be all fresh, and now it's gotten fewer and fewer far between. But he just surprised me with a new one today. So it is not easy to get those scallops sometimes, I promise you.
So follow Chris Ingersoll on Twitter for all of your Pascal news.
You can dig into my archives and probably see all 113 of them still.
Yeah. Your number one source for Pascal news.
Right. But some of it is Pascal. A lot of it is Pascal, but some of it is just, making the daily rounds, which I've done less and less of since I've got like 25 million bells in the bank. Like, I stopped buying turnips and whatnot, but the Wii U, original topic and not more 3DS gushing. It had Lego City Undercover up front, and like I said, the Monster Hunter, if you're into that, and I am certainly into that. And then nothing.
Then was nothing, right, yeah.
And then September, I think, is that when Rayman finally hit for you guys?
Yes. So that was very early September. There was Pikmin 3 in August. Don't forget that. All right,
Pikmin
that.
3 in August.
There was that flurry of Pikmin 3, Rayman Legends, Wonderful 101. Like, then things started to hit, and that was good. And then we got Zelda.
Zelda, yep.
Mario.
The worst selling.
Hey, I've heard of those guys.
Mario thing ever. Right? It's like the lowest for sales.
Yeah, well, I know in Japan it had a horrible launch.
We don't have numbers here because it was up against the Xbox launch or the PS4. One of the two came out that same day.
And Tearaway.
It was also competing against Zelda and the new Mario Party.
It was not competing against Mario Party.
Still, but it seemed like they were overloading that Friday for no reason.
Yeah, absolutely they were. And it was one of those things where they had to get it out before Black Friday in North America.
But right. really, like a week before for one of them would have been great.
And what I have been noticing lately is a change in the marketing for the Wii U, because that has been probably its biggest problem to date.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Like now, like you, now that they've got like Mario 3D World to plug with, you can see you're seeing a lot more like, we can do this as a family. We can, you know, this is it. We upgrade to Wii U, like making sure upgrade to Wii U, making sure that this is not a $300 peripheral for your Wii.
Yeah.
Like so many people still think it is to this day.
Yeah. In fact, I think I've seen a commercial or two where they're like, it's not the Wii, it's a new system. Like specifically just saying that. Like, all
hey,
right,
guys,
let's
guys.
Get this. Let's rip off the Band-Aid. Let's be clear.
This isn't the Wii. Everyone. Hey.
And the, like I said, the other problem that has been hamstringing them is, other than those handful of games I mentioned and the occasional third party thing like the Lego Marvel, that has been it. Like maybe 8 games of note came out for the Wii U this year, which is inexcusable. Even given Nintendo's historically shaky third party thing. And a lot of that is, I guess, Nintendo has admitted, hey guys, HD programming is hard and this is the first time we've had to do it.
Yeah. That part is a little strange, but you know,
so
like,
hopefully they get over that hurdle and then just start bringing things out. And that seems to be, I guess, their tentative 2014 plan seems to be a lot of that.
Yeah, 2014 is going to be a good year for the Wii U. I mean, you're going to have Donkey Kong, you're going to have Smash, you're going to have Mario Kart. I'm assuming that like that Yarn Yoshi project, if it ever releases, will probably release next year.
And then there's for the more non-Nintendo audience, Bayonetta 2 should hit at some point that year, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully. I don't want to.
Guys.
Yeah.
You can play as Cranky Kong.
You can.
I'm so happy.
Was that worth the 3-month delay?
Yes. Was that worth the 3-hour telecast?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We need more Crank.
Yeah, but also, like, in addition to that stuff, you know, there have been all these studios that have promised Wii U support for their, you know, indie games.
Yeah.
And you know that they're really excited about it because, you know, at heart, I think a lot of indie developers always wanted their games on Nintendo systems, but WiiWare was just the worst place ever. So now we're going to see a lot of that stuff release, and I think, you know, much like the Vita's really thriving on having indie stuff right now. Well, I say thriving, it's the Vita. But the Wii U is also going to have that sort of like, I'll just dive into the eShop and pick up some cool stuff and play it. So I think we're going to see some of that next year too.
Yeah, Nintendo's in talks with Sierra right now, talking about putting games made in Construct on the eShop. So that's another app for indie games.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it's going to work out, but it's something that they're discussing right now.
Yeah. But even with that stuff not working, just having a nice, good place to get that stuff, I think it could be interesting. And especially with, frankly, just playing a lot of those games where the visuals aren't like the main selling point and being able to play them on the gamepad is kind of a good way to, like, if you're going to buy them in one place, buy it on the place where you can play it on the gamepad. Yeah. That's a good selling point.
Although it has kind of saddened me that the gamepad has become more home for off-screen play than it has for, like, innovative uses.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the Wii U doesn't need a television more than it is the Wii U has two things that it can do simultaneously.
Yeah, we're still waiting for that kind of promise. Like, nothing besides Nintendo Land has delivered on that.
Zombie U
is fine. But, like, a lot of the stuff.
Zombie U was fine. Lego City did good work with it.
Yeah.
Wonderful 101, not really so much, but the drawing on it was a little when you don't need to use the right stick. But, more what I was thinking of, at least at this point. And kind of related to what we were talking earlier about Nintendo's slow starts.
Yeah.
Put some DS quality features on this thing.
Yeah.
Like Monster Hunter basically uses the gamepad and the bottom screen of the 3DS for the same functions. Like you can put your map down there, you can put all kinds of panels and stuff down there, and it's almost mirrored the two things.
I was going to say a good example of that is Wind Waker.
Yeah.
You have your map, and your map runs in real time. You can item switch in real time. It makes the Zelda experience a lot more bearable for people like me that have no patience.
One thing I'm really surprised Nintendo doesn't do is bring back the days of the Game Boy Player. So, for example, because the gamepad has touchscreen, they could essentially sell you DS games.
I think specifically with that stuff,
yeah, you might need actual hardware, but if they could have like a 3DS player on the Wii U, like a thing you bought, you could put on there that you could play DS and 3DS games on your Wii U, and it would output the top screen to the TV and the bottom screen to the gamepad, or maybe even some options where you could have both show up for some reason. Like, I think that would be really cool. It might be problematic from a technological perspective, but yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, but they could even just get like a dock that you put your 3DS in.
That may or may not work, but I mean, I want that really badly, but I don't know if it's feasible.
Failing that, I would like to see, like, clearly the potential is there. Monster Hunter is proving this, that you can do the save transfer between identical, more or less, versions of the game.
Right. Like, so there was, like, a rumor that Luigi's Mansion may be getting, like, a port, and, like, that would have made a lot of sense. I mean, with the lineup of the Wii U being so thin, if they could have, like, basically cross-platform, like, first-party games, that would be pretty cool. And it would bolster the lineup some. I know there are a lot of 3DS games where I'd rather just sit on the couch and play it at least sometimes. I would be okay if it didn't look great because, like,
you weren't expecting. Can you imagine, like, Link Between Worlds on the big screen?
I can't imagine that looking particularly great.
You'd lose the 3D, obviously, but.
Yeah. 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 Anyway.
So, enough about that, I guess, because. Nintendo is a ship to write, and they've taken steps, but we'll see what it looks like at this time next year.
Yeah.
So yeah, the PS4 launched, the Xbox One launched.
Yay!
There's very little to say about that we haven't in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. There's not much to touch upon. I think
there's not a lot of perspective, but yeah. I do think we are starting to see, and you know, I've said this before, we're starting to see Sony return to kind of this swagger. We'll see if next year brings about like a rubber band back to earth with Microsoft taking over North America again, or maybe some arrogance slipping in on the Sony side, which we haven't seen in a while, but it's tempting.
Not since the PS3 launch.
Yeah, not since the 2 years after, too. It took a little while, but. Like, it'd be interesting to see where that goes and how that changes the dynamic. The PS4 doesn't have the camera bundled in, and I think that's going to mean a lot for the experience of playing the PS4. You know,
is it?
That we're specifically not going to see very much from the camera for PS4 stuff. And
can I ask if I don't think that's a bad thing? I mean, I think the Kinect is going to be more so than anything for game specific. It's going to be a voice thing.
Yeah, like, and I just think
I don't know.
Basically, since it was not bundled with the system, it's going to be basically useless. Whereas with the Xbox One, they're going to be integrated into everything because everyone has one. So I think you're going to see more compelling experiences there, and I think that's going to be the main difference between the two systems, and it will probably define a lot of what means what where.
I think Sony sacrificed bundling the camera so that they didn't end up being the more expensive console.
Yeah, or
that's literally what happened.
I like that, or could be the price. I'd rather a company just scrap something instead of like try to do it half-assed, so like people aren't wild about Kinect still, and I think PlayStation looked at that, and it's like, I think people would rather us have that console without it and be $100 cheaper. So
I will say, you know, the new Kinect is a pretty good system. Like, a lot of the issues I've had with the 360 Kinect were fixed, like the voice recognition's better, the motion control's better, so once that reaches more people and there's compelling content with it, which there isn't now, I think that could have less of a stigma and be
appealing. I guess my problem is I think Harmonix's new game Fantasia looks great. Outside of that, yes. I guess I just think that the assumption that there will be compelling content that's exclusively Kinect or at least uses Kinect.
Sports Rivals looks pretty great too. So
does it?
Yeah.
And there's that sweary game that might be neat. Maybe.
Is that Kinect? I know so. It's on Xbox, but I don't know if it uses Kinect. I don't know. I just know I just saw that trailer at E3, and it looked really weird. It's like, oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, but we'll see where that goes next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the year. Kind of ups and downs, mostly downs, but some ups.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
Yeah, look, there are good games. There were lots of good games.
Yes, there were
so many good games.
A lot of good games. Too many good games, which is the best problem to have.
And speaking of good games, you guys stick around. Over the holidays, we're going to be sharing the best games, both for us personally and our overall Game of the Year awards. And at the end of the year, we're going to have our next podcast, which is our Game of the Year episode. Find out our six finalists and hear us talk about them.
Yes.
Yes.
They're all fantastic games.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
One company didn't do quite as bad as you think it did looking at that list.
Yeah.
True.
All right. Stay tuned. But for now, for Andrew, Henry, Jeff, Chris, and Lucas, I'm Graham. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter at snackbargames.